Welcome to the Lions Den University Report. This program brings you a behind-the-scenes look at the spiritual life on today's university and college campuses. Now here's your host, Glenn Bailey.
The following program was previously broadcast.
And we're here again in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. This is a second part of our continuing an interview that we just started. And it's with Dr. Michael Behe here in Lehigh University in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, a professor of biology here for over 20 years, and yet a standard bearer for the concept of intelligent design, that we're not, life is not the result of random natural processes, that it couldn't be. It's so highly complex and has so many components that need to be simultaneously working together that it shows the evidence of a designer. And Mike, welcome again to our microphones.
Thanks very much. It's always a pleasure.
And as we had a chance to talk before turning on the tape, you recently, or in last fall, I guess, took a trip over to England to talk about this subject of intelligent design.
Yeah, that's right. People, many listeners may not know that in Europe, the intelligent design movement has lagged a little bit behind that in the United States, but now in England, it's going full steam, and there's a full-fledged intelligent design group that's organizing things and trying to raise people's awareness of the issue. And one of their plans for doing so was to invite an ID speaker, an intelligent design speaker, to give talks at various places and explain what is meant by intelligent design and try to garner some publicity. And they had me this year, and I was over for 10 days and was in England and Northern Ireland and Scotland and all over the place, in London, Cambridge, and
tremendous.
It was a blast, and not only for me, because I got to, you know, a free vacation out of it, but
right.
Also, because the talks were all jam packed, and
in terms of the audience, they were full house.
That's right, yeah. A lot of press attended the talks, and so word got out not only to the people who attended, but to people who read the newspapers or listened to radio interviews and so on. So the people over there were very happy with it, and I'm looking for more and more inroads in the land of Richard Dawkins.
All right, great. And certainly, but I talked with you, and you said it's still just as hostile in the U.S. You can't find any place much more hostile than being an intelligent design promoter in the U.S.
Well, yeah, that's true. The great majority of citizens in the United States, the general public, believes in something like design or creation, and probably 80% or more, 90%. But especially in the upper reaches of science, the heads of organizations and so on, it's almost a mere reversal of that. Only a small percentage does, and 90% believe essentially either in no God or they don't know what they believe. They don't know what's going on. And the atmosphere is such that if you say that you think what has been discovered reflects design, and not because of scriptures you've read or anything like that, but because of the systems themselves that have been elucidated through scientific techniques, if you say that, then people will, in the scientific community, will be very hostile to you. And if you're in an early stage of your career, you risk losing your career. If you don't have tenure yet, you risk never getting tenure. Even if you're a well-known scientist, and you say, nice things about intelligent design, you can generally look to a lowering of your reputation and a much harder fight getting your grants renewed and so on.
Right. And of course, perhaps a good number of listeners are familiar with that film that Ben Stein did called Expelled, Intelligence Not Welcome. where he brought out a number of scientists who have lost jobs or been denied tenure and other types of consequences directly related, not to the other aspects of their science, which is fine, but related to their belief in intelligent design.
Yeah, that's right. And it shows you how pivotal this particular issue is. I mean, if I had a theory that, it wasn't calcium that activated many cells, but magnesium, which told them to turn on under certain circumstances. And if I insisted on it and data showed I was, was against me, scientists would kind of shrug and smile, but they wouldn't start a campaign to discredit me. But if you say, hey, look at these machines that we've discovered in the cell, they're really sophisticated. There's computer code that's running the cell, and there's little trucks and buses, literally trucks and buses that shuttle supplies from one end of the cell to the other. These things don't arise without design, and we have no reason to think they could in life either. If you say that, then people in the scientific community get very, very upset because you're talking against one of the fundamental premises that they hold very dear, and that is that they can explain everything about life based on randomness, natural law, and energy and matter.
All right. And so while you were in England, you debated an individual, and because he sympathized with the presentation of your position in the educational setting, that he lost a position that he had.
Yes. So it doesn't occur just in the United States. In England, there's this a man who was a professor at a university over there, but also had an appointment as the academic advisor to the Royal Society, which is kind of equivalent to the National Academy of Sciences in the United States. The most renowned scientists are in that society. And he was what you'd call a theistic evolutionist. He is a Christian, but he thinks, well, Darwinian evolution is compatible with God making life on Earth. And nonetheless, he says, well, we know that's true. We scientists know that's true. But a lot of students come from backgrounds where they think something like creation or design is true. And, when they come into the schools, they have questions. So we should be prepared to talk about this and help guide discussion and so on. And the scientific community became livid. What do you mean talk about creation or design in the science classroom or even in the religion classroom in England, where they have religious education in the public schools? And they were so furious that he was essentially booted out of his position as an advisor to the Royal Society. So you can't, even if you disagree with intelligent design, you can't even, say something like, well, I disagree, but, it's, there are points worth discussing here. There's nothing good about intelligent design to many scientists.
Right. And if we've talked before about the philosophical implications that come from a materialistic evolutionary view of life, even to the point, that we wonder why it's so important for an evolutionist to prove that life is not important, that the consequence, the logical consequence of an accidental existence is a meaningless existence, and random life means that we're not here for a purpose, but rather we're just a chance, container of chemicals, and to propose morality and purpose and meaning is contradictory to our origin.
Yes, that's certainly a view that's commonly held among those people who embrace Darwinism and like it. They want the world to be like that. They want the world to be accidental. And if it is accidental, then they're the final final say on whatever they want to do. But it's when you do that, you're kind of when you reach your conclusion for that reason, you're betraying your job as a scientist. A scientist is supposed to look at the natural world, describe it, and try to understand where it might have come from in spite of what your preferences are.
Right.
You know, some people would prefer there to be a designed universe. Some people would prefer there not to be one. And for a long time, in the late 19th century, and nobody could see the sorts of design we see today in the universe. The universe looked like a big, bland place, and life, even life's, people had crummy microscopes to work with and didn't know much of the facts about the molecular and cellular basis of life we know now. And so many people, even many Christians, thought that life just didn't exude that design that they knew was there from their study of the scriptures. But now the pendulum has swung back, and the evidence itself, without reference to anything outside of the stuff that science studies, is strongly pointing towards design. And to deny that design simply because it goes against your philosophical preferences is a betrayal of science.
Right. And so the Bible, while speaking of religion, also would agree with what you're saying, that outside of the Bible, there's an evidence of the existence of God the designer, and that is nature itself. And it says, for example, in the Psalms, Psalm 19, the heavens declare the glory of God. And the firmament that speak of his greatness. And it talks even about that nature speaks to us of a message that there is a wonderful creator. And then Paul says in Romans chapter 1 that men suppress, that deny God, they suppress the truth that's obvious, that God's power and divine godhood is exhibited in what has been created. And so the scientific facts there speak of a designer. And we who are Christians believe that designer is God, and it says in the Bible that Jesus is God the Son. He is the creator of our universe. And so you're not trying to force the religious view. You're trying to promote the scientific view, which happens to imply you have to make some religious decisions as well.
That's right. I mean, if you argue that we are designed and created because you believe the psalmist who said we are fearfully and wonderfully made, okay, that might be true, but it's a religious argument. It might be a good religious argument, but it's based on your accepting of scriptures. But if you study a cell and you see nuclear pores that have gates on them that look for passwords from molecules that have to pass through these gates, and only the molecules that have the passwords can pass through, and when they pass through, they're recognized by other machineries that takes the information carried by these molecules and translates it into a functioning molecular machine, and on and on and on, then you know what fearfully and wonderfully made really is, and you can say we are designed because systems like this, complex, elegant, functional, interactive systems, do not, in all of our experience, arise without an intelligent designer.
Well, we're glad you're willing to be one of the champions of intelligent design, and I'm here in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, with Michael Behe, professor of biology at Lehigh University. And again, thanks, Mike, for joining us. As you always do, you always give a great presentation, and we're happy to have you.
Oh, great. Thanks for having me.
You have been listening to the Lion's Den University Reports. If you would like more information about the Christian life or would like to contact the Lion's Den or one of the guests, please write us at the Lion's Den, Post Office Box 226, Mifflinburg, Pennsylvania, 17844, or email ltcldur@yahoo.com.